This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
Think about how many times over the years, Roger, that when the auto show has been going on, it's been nasty in
Chicago. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, it's like you're wondering, why am I going to go look at nice, clean, shiny cars when I've just spent the last 2 hours cleaning my office home?
Right.
I just don't get it.
Am I going to spend all that money on something that's just going to get dirty like this?
Exactly.
But you know, this for some reason in my mind every year, by the time I get to the end of January, I think, oh well, man, you know, we're over the hump now, and I
right.
think maybe it's because the days are getting longer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it stays lighter longer, and I'm thinking, oh, yeah, well, you know, spring can't be far away. But then, wham, we get pounded in February.
February, not only snow, but the cold.
Yeah, and it is the snowiest month of the year in Chicago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what was it, 6 or 7 years ago, we had the snowiest I think we had 29 inches of snow in February.
Well, was that 2011 when we had all that snow? I got stuck on Lakeshore Drive. We had that heavy snow. That was right at the beginning of February. And I think that set the tone for the month that year.
That sounds right. That's hard to believe. It was 7 years ago.
Yeah.
You were out there just piddling around on Lakeshore Drive.
I had nothing else to do. You know, school was done. I'm driving home. Oh, look, all these other cars all over the place.
Yeah.
I guess I'll stop and keep them company.
And lessons learned.
Yes, sir.
You carry a winter survival kit with you now in your vehicle because of that?
Unfortunately, I don't, and I know I should. I have junk back there.
I'd be the poster boy for that.
I used to have my golf clubs back there, but I finally took those out.
That would help you out on Lakeshore Drive in a snowstorm. First winter I came to Chicago, I mean, my folks were worried about me, you know. And
in the big city.
My mom and I came down to the farm, and she packed a winter survival kit for me, you know, toilet paper and candy bars. And
I should do that. That's an excellent. It really is. An excellent idea. I've been worried now.
My daddy gave me a big log chain, heavy-duty log chain that, you know, like we'd use to pull the tractors out of the farm, and I had that when I came to Chicago.
Yeah.
I still have it, by the way.
Well, you know, back then, the cars were built like tanks.
That's true.
Remember? They were all metal, and they stuck to the ground, and they'd pull you out. You didn't need front-wheel drive, because that tank would just pull you right through the toughest snow. I'm telling you. But nowadays, you need front wheel, back wheel, fifth wheel drive. Goodness gracious.
Well,
Max, you have a good one.
I will catch up with you a little bit later, sir. Thank you much, Roger.
It.
Take care. Roger Badish in the WGN newsroom. Max Armstrong here with you at 12 minutes past 5 on the Saturday morning show. Orion taking the morning off. I saw him. We were together about a little more than a week ago. It was neat. I stopped by there at the Ponderosa in the Valley of the Sun, and it was out there by the pool. We weren't using it that day. It was a little bit chilly there, but it was great to see the big O and have the chance to visit with him. And coming up, we're going to talk about something else that goes on in the month of February, the Louisville Farm Show. That's in the week ahead. We'll visit with our technology buddy, Chad Colby, coming up here next on WGN Radio. Well, from time to time, we like to visit with our friend Chad Colby, who keeps track of ag technology, and it is coming in a fast and furious way. There are so many new advances in the technology coming into the cab, and in just a few weeks, when farmers are moving into the field for the planting season, that cab will also be a farm office. You will see those producers as they are putting in the crop, also doing a lot of business in that cab because they have all the technology there and the capability with the various tools of technology to devote attention to something other than driving the tractor. Chad Colby, I bet you're headed to Louisville in the week ahead, aren't you?
Absolutely, Max. It's the largest indoor show in the U.S., and yes, I'm not going to miss that one for sure.
It's not quite of the scale as the big one every other year over in Germany, but this thing is massive at Louisville. It has really grown over the years, hasn't it?
You know, Max, it's been going on for over 50 years. I think they got around 1.2 million of show space down there, almost 900 vendors. And I think if you do that math, we're a short 28 acres of walking. And you know what? It is an amazing show in the heart of winter. And it certainly attracts people really from all over the U.S. and honestly all over the world. Lots of companies come there every year.
You mentioned the heart of winter, and I think I've always maintained anyway from farmers that I've met there and visited with there that it's a kind of a social event. It's a little bit of an escape. It's a cabin fever release, I think, in a cold, snowy winter.
You know, Max, I love telling the story. I can vividly remember my freshman year in college coming home on a Tuesday, a snowy Tuesday in Bureau County, Illinois, jumping in the pickup truck with my dad, and we drove all night through a snowstorm to get down to the farm show and attended the tractor pulls and checked out all the new machinery, just like lots of families are going to be doing here in the very short future. And it is. I think the tractor pull is also a big draw, right? Because, you know, tractor pulls go hand in hand with agriculture here in the U.S., and it's just a fun week. And you know, that show's really grown to basically its maximum capacity. There's no more facility, right? It's completely full. And I think that also helps with the show, right? It can't grow out of its boots because they're only so big.
There's a waiting list, as I understand it, and I know several small companies would like to be a part of that show. What's the first place you're going? Well, I bet you'll zero in on some red paint there to see the equipment of Case IH, but is there anything in particular that you'll want to see when you go to that booth first and foremost?
You know, Max, for me personally, at all these shows, and Agritechnica was exactly the same thing in Germany just a few months ago. What always entices me is the press releases and the new stuff that gets launched on Wednesday morning at 9 o'clock. And, you know, yes, Case is going to have some new stuff. We know all the major players are going to show their hands, if you would. And they try to keep those cards kind of held close to their chest here. But you know what? What's going to attract me that Wednesday morning is the new stuff that gets released from everybody. And that's always exciting because most of the manufacturers today know the importance of showcasing it at the big shows, whether that's the Farm Progress Show, which you and I work so closely with, or at the National Farm Machinery Show next week. So I'm always attracted to the latest and greatest, and you and I will be talking about it for weeks, what the new stuff we see.
Yeah, it's kind of a sideshow, isn't it? When you go by some of these booths, and they're opening up the show, and they're making those announcements, you'll see a crowd gathered around, 15, 20, 40 people there, and someone on a PA system pointing out the details of what they really want to showcase at Louisville.
Yeah, you're 100% right. You've been seeing it a long time, and it's, you know, it's a lot of fun, because you know, at the end of the day, it's kind of like the automobile industry. You know, they do it at their auto shows. And for us, this is, you know, in the U.S., there's really two big places that guys do it. You know, obviously at Farm Progress and here next week at the National Farm Machinery Show. And, you know, I know a lot of manufacturers, they've got some plans for next week, and it's going to be very exciting for the producers as well, because the producer can go look at that new technology long before, honestly, Max, their local dealership even knows about the technology most of the time. So it's a lot of fun to kind of get the heads up because you took the time to go to the show. But, you know, it starts on Wednesday morning, you know, goes through Saturday, I do believe, Max, and, you know, they'll have huge crowds down there. They always do.
Sometimes growers go there, too, I've noticed, Chad, with a list of things, not just the big things they want to see, but you know, they've seen an ad in a farm magazine, or they've heard us talking about the broadcast, something that would work for them and their operation, and maybe it's something in the way of shop tools, or maybe it's something in the way of a welding cart or something that will really help them, you know, whether it's right in that shop in the wintertime or maybe out in the field during the planting or growing season.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with you, Max. A lot of it is the little things that producers are doing today with commodity prices and margins as tight as they are in agriculture. You know, guys are looking for that next thing they can do to bring some efficiency to their operation. And whether it's, you know, adding LED lights to their 20-year-old tractor so it uses way less power and is twice as bright so they can be more efficient at night, it can be as much as, you know, new software, new solutions that you can use on your iPad or other efficiencies on your farm. And that's what's kind of nice about these farm shows is you can showcase all that where a lot of that technology, maybe you don't see at your local provider, at your local, you know, equipment dealership or your co-op, you know, and some of this stuff, honestly, the only way you see it first is seeing it at the farm show. And that's what's exciting for a lot of producers. And you know what? It attracts people really from all over the U.S. And I think that's what makes it fun as well.
We're a few years into this economic downturn in agriculture now, and one would think that farmers, when faced with these difficult prices, challenging opportunities to maintain any profitability in this business, that they would really, really pull in the horns and not be buying anything. But that isn't necessarily the case, I gather.
Well, it's more about the return on that investment. You know, most of these guys are still managing multi-million dollar operations, and it comes down to simple economics. If you can spend $10,000 or $100,000 and get that return, you're going to do it. I talked to a good friend of mine, Max, yesterday. He told me he just pulled the trigger on a new grain bin. And I was like, really? And he said, yeah. You know, he said, we're putting in a 100,000 bushel grain bin because I've been paying that in storage to my local co-op. And he said, in 3 years, my bin is paid for simply because I filled it with grain. And, you know, those are the kind of things that guys are really paying close attention to, is what can we spend money on and what can I get an absolute return on my investment. And that's what's exciting. You know, another thing that I guess I always look for in these is you get a real pulse, too, of what guys are thinking about. I mean, I know I've got some friends in Texas, Max. Started planting corn last week. I saw some pictures on Twitter this week of corn coming up in Texas. And, you know, it won't be long before guys here will be in the field. And Louisville Farm Show is kind of that kickoff to say, hey, listen, guys, spring's coming. When you get home, you better get ready to roll, because it comes fast this time of year.
Interesting to hear you relate the story about the grain bin going up. We went through such a bin building boom for a period of years there earlier. You know, when you go back thinking about 2008, 2009, 2010 through 2012, and then, yeah, understandably so, with commodity prices being so low, it was kind of unusual to see a new bin being erected, unless it was replacing one that had been destroyed by a storm or something like that. But I know there were a lot of structures, a lot of steel sold, a lot of bolts sold to put those together back in the day.
Yeah, that's for sure, Max. You know, a lot of the grain capacities on farm, really, it's a matter of what your solutions are nearby. You know, you get down where I live in Goodfield, Illinois, you get south of here very far. You know what? There's some co-ops that take care of growers in ways I wasn't ever accustomed to up in Bureau County. Most of our grain went right to the Illinois River, but we still had a lot of storage on the farm because the river terminals couldn't physically take all that grain in the fall. So you didn't have a choice. And I think a lot of it just depends on the circumstances nearby. But you know what? It's great seeing producers get focused back on the bottom line and really pay attention to where they spend money, and they're only going to do it in places that they can get a return, which is great this time of year.
Well, we appreciate always visiting with you, and we look forward to your new series that'll be coming up on This Week in Agribusiness, the television show that Orion and I host each weekend. I know you're going to give a tech update on a regular basis there. What's new and exciting, and what farmers really will find value in terms of technology.
Yeah, Max, I'm really looking forward to that. You know, you and I have played with technology over the years, and it's going to be a lot of fun weekly showing kind of the latest and greatest. And you know what? You never know. You'll have to tune in and see what we're checking out every week.
Good talking to you, sir. We'll see you in Louisville.
You bet, Max. Thank you.
Chad Colby joining us this morning here on the Saturday Morning Show, WGN Radio. The beef industry, what's going on with those folks? We'll talk with a longtime respected cattle market analyst. Randy Block from Cattle Facts will join us in the next half hour. We'll share some comments, too, from South American crop analyst Mike Cordonier, who says this may be the beginning of an improvement in the situation for the corn farmer. The corn market may be getting a little bit better, he says, in the months ahead. If we get some cooperation from the southern hemisphere, we pay close attention to the weather. Roger will update the weather forecast momentarily. But I don't know if you follow my Twitter account, and I tweeted this the other day, after seeing what was happening the night of the Super Bowl on a farm down in Missouri. And it was something that was put on Facebook by Glenn Cope. He's a friend of mine who farms down there, not too far from that area around Branson, down in that region. Glenn and his dad, O.D. Cope, and Glenn's son, Oren, were in the laundry room of the farm home the night of the Super Bowl. They weren't able to be in there watching the television set in the living room. They were in the laundry room and had two twin calves that had been born. They brought them into the laundry room to wipe them down, clean them up, warm them up, and give them a better chance at survival. It's this time of the year I really enjoy the social media because you do see a lot of calves born out there. They wind up in places where you wouldn't expect to see them, in a bathtub in the house, even in the kitchen of the house, and in this case with the Cope family, they were right there in the laundry room as the producers on the farm were providing tender, loving care for those calves. 5:30 here on Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago, WGNRadio.com. If you're an Amazon Echo user, just say, play WGN Radio on TuneIn. Here's the news at 5:30 with Roger. Man, I was worried about you there. I thought maybe you'd had the grabber.
Yeah, no. That'll come later today when I try to shoveling.
Be careful, sir.
You too, buddy.
Thank you. Roger Badish in the WGN newsroom. Max Armstrong here on duty with you on the Saturday morning show. And this time of year, our friends who farm in the Midwest, who grow corn and soybeans, kind of keep an eye on through their analysts, their advisors, our broadcasts on WGN and this week in agribusiness on what's going on in the Southern Hemisphere, because the crops grown there ultimately help determine the prices up here. And quite often we visit with a fellow who calls himself the Soybean and Corn Advisor.
Mike Ardoniere, welcome, sir. Good to have you back with us.
Always my pleasure, Max.
This time of the year, we don't know whether you're going to be in the United States or in the Southern Hemisphere. You often go there in the wintertime to check on crops, but you stay close to them regardless of where you are, don't you?
Well, South America is kind of in the news this year.
Well, let's talk about that. Let's go country by country to begin with. Brazil, of course, in the midst of producing a big soybean crop, but I have to ask you, first and foremost, about all of those pictures coming out of Brazil again this year of trucks on the dirt roads.
That's Highway 163 heading north from Mato Grosso up to the Amazon River. That highway, there's about 180 kilometers that are not asphalted. And unfortunately, some of that non-asphalted area is in a mountainous region. They had very heavy rains. And as you said, the picture showed about 4,000 trucks waiting in line in a traffic jam. Now, it's not as bad as last year. The Brazilian Army is in charge of the whole project, and they pre-positioned like 220 people plus heavy equipment in anticipation of this problem. But it rained more than anticipated, and it's a big, long, steep grade. And these dual trailer trucks just can't make it up that grade. It's a clay roadbed, and it's slick. So it's going to be a problem until the rains end, unfortunately. That's not going to be for a while.
Did I understand you to say nearly 4,000 trucks?
4,000 trucks, yeah. Each one carries about 50 tons. So you got, 200,000 tons of soybeans kind of waiting in line. I saw a video the other day. It took three road graders hooked together to pull one truck up this hill. And you got 4,000 waiting behind you, so you can't do that one at a time. It has started to rain less. So as soon as you get a couple days without rain, I think they can rectify the situation.
It would clear up rather quickly, then, you're saying?
Yes.
If
the rain stops. Now, they promise to finish asphalting this road before the next rainy season, so it all should be cleared up by fall.
I didn't see the line of trucks, but I did see a video clip on Twitter the other day, and I don't know if it was, it looked like it was a soldier standing there talking. I, of course, do not have command of the Portuguese that you do, so I didn't know what he was saying, but you could see the road, and it looked miserable. It looked like just a muddy cow path.
Oh, it's terrible. And these trucks are really heavy. And they're dual trailers, so they're huge. And they just wreak havoc with a dirt road.
Now, has there been some trucker unrest also? I mean, obviously they can't be pleased about this, but have there been some labor disputes too?
Oh, yes. They've been burning tires and blocking the highway in protest of the situation. In fact, all three countries have trucker protest. In Argentina, starting earlier this week, the truckers are protesting low freight rates. They wanted higher rates. So they're blocking shipments of soybeans to the port in Rosario, Argentina. And in Paraguay, there's been a truck strike now for about a week and a half. They're protesting these big trucks coming out of Brazil into Paraguay. to haul soybeans. So there's a lot of surface transportation issues in South America.
Strikes are not uncommon at harvest time, are they?
No, it's a regular practice. I expect a lot more in Argentina. Inflation is high. The economy is not doing so good. So there'll be more coming for sure.
I remember one year we were there. My cameraman at the time, Phil Reed, and I are in the streets of Buenos Aires, and he got caught up in that strike. They were going down the street, and as they were moving, he was moving along with them. But it was a little bit unnerving. They were firing off cannons, and you know, you weren't sure what was going to happen there as this was going down the street. But it's commonplace, isn't it?
It's commonplace. So, and usually the strikes don't last very long. The government accommodates them. When you got inflation 30-40%, you have to have a big pay raise every year. And then you start losing, you know, a lot of ground economically. So it's a common practice in Argentina.
The bottom line is it has very little effect on exports after all is said and done. It's only short-term effect, these disruptions such as transportation problems.
Now, the problem they had last year, a year ago in Brazil, it did last long enough that 11 vessels had to leave the Amazon ports and go to other ports in Brazil to get their soybeans. Now, it cost lots of money for a lot of people. They broke contracts, all that sort of thing. So this year's not as bad as last year.
So if we're thinking that there might be a little business swing to the United States because of this, don't count on it, you're saying.
A little bit. Probably more swing to the United States because just the delay in the plant, delay in the harvesting of the soybeans in Brazil.
Talking about the crop conditions themselves, what are those rains doing in Brazil to the fields?
Okay, Brazil is about maybe 6 or 8% harvested, a little bit slower than last year. It is slowing down early harvest. Now, they planted late, so they're harvesting late. And my current estimate is 112 million tons for Brazil. Last year, they did 114 million tons. CONAB just released their latest estimate this week, and they're at 112 million tons as well.
That's the Brazilian body that estimates crops.
Correct. That's the Brazilian equivalent of the USDA. And they raised their estimate. Brazil soybeans might go up a little bit more. Hmm. Now, in Argentina, their soybean estimate is going to go down because of drought. And we'll talk about that here in a minute. But the soybean total production in South America, Brazil might go up a little bit, Argentina might go down a little bit. So it's kind of a wash, so to speak, for soybeans in South America. But that's not the case for corn. The corn crop in Brazil is going to be way down. The corn crop in Argentina is going to be way down. There's no upside to corn in South America, only a downside.
Part of the reason is because of the rains delaying the soybean harvest in Brazil, and that will in turn then delay the planting of the corn crop?
Right. That second crop of corn, double crop corn after soybeans.
Say that word for me.
Safrinha.
Safrinha. You put that little
perfect
bit of a roll in there, don't you?
Way to go, Matt. Pretty good, pretty good.
I usually never say it right, so I wanted to hear you say it.
No, the safrinha crop is 70% of Brazil's total corn crop, and that's planted after soybeans. Now, the soybean harvest in Brazil, in Mato Grosso, it's about 2 weeks later than normal. In Paraná, which is the second biggest safrinha state, it's about 2 or 3 weeks later than normal. So the idea is that it's going to get past the ideal planting window, which is about the third week of February in Mato Grosso.
It's coming up quickly.
Yes, absolutely. And they are only about 10% planted. So they got a lot to go yet. If it rains down between now and the end of February, it's going to delay it even more. I don't think they plant all the safrinha corn. I think it's going to be down about 10%. At least the first 70% will be planted, no problem. It's that last 30% you got to wonder about. It's going to come to March 1st, and a farmer's got to decide, should I plant my corn late and expect a low yield, and they have low prices. Right now it's about $2.20 a bushel in Mato Grosso for corn. They need $2.50 a bushel to break even. So if you plant it late into early March, the chances of above trend line yield are really small. And all the advisory firms in Brazil tell the farmers, you need above trend line yields to make money this year on safrinha corn. And if you plant it late, that's not going to happen. So I don't think they plant all their safrinha corn.
So some of the acreage won't go in that they had intended to put in.
Correct. They'll go to maybe some grain sorghum, maybe a little bit of sunflowers, maybe millet, or just put in some grass to keep the ground covered, you know, until the next harvest.
Help us get our arms around this supply a little bit. I know you don't make price projections, but you watch that balance sheet for the world very closely. Is this kind of a reduction in the intended corn crop of Brazil enough to affect that global balance sheet for corn?
You know, we're kind of setting the stage here for maybe better corn prices, and here's why. A reduction in the corn production in South America by itself would not spike the corn price, but it sets the stage for the next crop in the United States. Now, we've had two record crops in a row for corn. If we have just an average crop or a mediocre crop, then South America will have set the stage for a reduced supply. Then if the United States comes in with a not a record crop, then we may have a story for corn. So I think corn could have a story here, depending on what we do in the United States this coming year.
It's a big if, isn't it? But, as you say, if those events were to happen back-to-back, it could make things a little bit different here.
You know, the last 2 years, corn crop in the United States has been unbelievably good. Will it be a third year in a row? I don't know. South America is stubbing its toe a little bit on corn, and I always kind of think that South America kind of leads United States in weather. You're always kind of similar. So if they have sort of a hot, dry summer, maybe we might have one too.
And we are using a lot of corn.
Oh, yes, absolutely. We need it. And for soybeans, you know, South America is doing okay on soybeans. That's no problem. Not too much of a problem this year. But we need a record crop every 6 months. And if we don't get a record crop every 6 months, supply starts to get tight. Now, we've had a record crop in South America a couple years in a row in the United States. So once again, if the United States has a mediocre crop, but then we're setting the stage for better prices.
How worried should we be about this tit-for-tat trade concern with China, with the possibility that they might strike back with some action on our soybean imports and opt instead for more coming out of the Southern Hemisphere?
Well, I think you better be concerned about it. They may not do it for soybeans, but they might do it for grain sorghum and DDGs and other products. You know, they need the soybeans, okay? But if South America, especially Brazil, has a big soybean crop, then they can afford to antagonize the United States a little bit. This whole thing about tit for tat, it's stupid, Max. You know, we should have free trade every place, and American farmers will suffer a lot if we start closing off trade avenues.
Let's keep our fingers crossed that the guy in the White House has the correct negotiating strategy.
You better cross both fingers.
That, too, is a big if, isn't it? Thank you, Mike.
Right.
Appreciate it. Good to see you.
Always my pleasure.
Mark Cardonier, the Soybean and Corn Advisor.
Thank you, Walter. Kind of interesting listening to what Mike had to say there about the possibility that we are setting the stage for better corn prices ahead. You know, if you take a look at the latest supply-demand situation around the world, the USDA is now saying we're going to export more corn than earlier projected. They raised the export level in a report this week. Conversely, they said we'll export fewer soybeans because that Brazilian crop is going to be filling some of the gap there, and China's buying a little bit less. But it's interesting. This will be the first year in quite a few that our demand for corn globally will be greater than the stocks globally around the world. So this is going to be interesting to watch. And farmers may back off on their corn plantings this spring. We'll see. Corn is not as good a crop as soybeans for many of these producers in our region in terms of the return on investment there. And this will be a little bit interesting, and hopefully we'll continue to, you know, we've got to see great big corn yields again this year after two very strong yield years if we want to fill that demand the way we have the past couple of years. So there may be some price improvement ahead. We'll hope so anyway. I talked a little bit earlier about, I want to share a visit with Randy Block, a longtime cattle industry analyst, and it's a longer visit than we have time for this morning. So next Saturday morning, I'll be visiting with Randy, who's with Cattle Facts, and he talks about everything going on in the world in terms of beef demand. And the big thing, as far as the producer and the consumer here in the United States, is we now have other countries around the world buying our beef. It's been a significant change in recent years, and that means the U.S. consumer, when he or she goes to buy beef, whether it's at the supermarket or we're dining at a restaurant, the price is being determined in part by what's going on around the globe because of the demand. So we'll talk about that next week with Randy Block, who's been a cattle industry analyst for almost 40 years. But when we were at the Cattlemen's Convention a few days ago, we were talking about the Farm Bill with Allison Cook, who is an executive director of governmental affairs for the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. And this time, unlike times in the past, maybe when a farm bill was written, the cattlemen are going a little more on the offensive. They haven't always been real active in saying, hey, we want this, we want this, we want this in a farm bill. Allison shared with me what they're really looking for this time around.
NCBA has three main priorities, the first one being a fully funded foot and mouth disease vaccine bank. This is a bank that would be housed overseas, and we'd love to get some full funding for it. You know, we need to make sure that we have protection for our producers against the possibility of a foot and mouth disease vaccine bank. So we have been lobbying very hard on that issue in hopes that both House and Senate Ag will be supportive of that and include that in their bill language.
What's the price tag on something like that, and how does it stack up against what would conceivably be the cost of the farm bill altogether?
So NCBA usually comes to these farm bills and not asking for a whole lot. This time around, we are asking for a little bit, and we do recognize that. We're asking for $150 million a year for the life of the farm bill, which is 5 years. We know it's an expensive price tag, but when you look at the detriment to the industry, and not just our industry, but the feed, the soybean and the corn side that would be affected as well if we had an outbreak, we recognize that the cost, the upfront cost, are a lot less than the easily 12 billion that would be spent to help our industry, not just our industry, but pork and sheep and dairy as well if there was an outbreak. So the overall protection in our minds is worth the spending at the beginning.
Conservation, is that on your mind as well?
Absolutely. So number two is conservation. We've had very strong conversations with both House and Senate Ag about the conservation title. Again, we're hoping to see language possibly by the end of the month, but I think that our members are hopefully going to be happy with the language that we've heard possibly will be there. We want to make the conservation title as strong as possible. We want to protect programs like EQIP that our producers really do enjoy using.
You alluded to it. This is a different stance for the NCBA. You've always monitored the process. It's not that you haven't had input, but this is a much more going on the offensive, I guess I would say.
Absolutely. You know, I think a lot of times we're having to be on the defense, and we're having to play a lot of defense and protect the industry, which we always are. There's always the possibility of us being under attack, and so part of my job is to make sure that we're protected through this farm bill as everybody that's interested in something comes to the table, right? So along those lines, our third policy interest is protecting the research title. That's so important to our industry. And how we feed the world, you know, how we feed the U.S., but how we feed the world as we move forward. Research is so important, and ag research continues to decline instead of increasing.
You might have seen me smile when you mentioned that. I'm a guy who's harped on this for years, that it's always an afterthought. When we write the farm bill, on down the line, people say, oh, yeah, we need to include this for research. You are now saying it's time to address this and make sure government continues to have a role.
Absolutely. I think this is one of those areas where all of agriculture can get together and supporting increased ag research so that, again, we can feed the world.
Finally, what's the attitude? What's the climate for writing a farm bill?
You know what? I think there's a lot of people that would like to get it done sooner rather than later. So we're ready, and we're ready to get the thing done. So bring it on.
The cattlemen will be involved, the rank and file members of the NCBA?
Absolutely. You know, we even have members of Congress that are NCBA members that are right there in the mix, and that's certainly exciting for us.
Allison Cook is her name, Executive Director of Governmental Affairs for the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. The Farm Bill is an interesting document, and a lot of people don't get too excited about it. Not all farmers get excited about it, especially, you know, you look back 5 years ago when grain prices were stronger, you know, there wasn't, man, not too much excitement about a Farm Bill. But yeah, now it's a different story, and it's not just farm programs. There are 15 titles, I think, to the Farm Bill, and that involves things like conservation and farm programs, but the biggest part of it is food assistance. The SNAP program, Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, what we used to call food stamps, that's almost 80% of the entire budget of what goes into what we call the Farm Bill. It'll be interesting to see if, again, this time around, as they go to write the Farm Bill, if there's an effort to separate out the nutrition programs from farm spending. And many farm organization leaders say that would be tragic because it would be difficult to pass a Farm Bill to get the consensus among all of those lawmakers, as partisan as that crowd is these days, to get the passage of a Farm Bill. Well, standing by to take over on the WGN Radio. Mike Steven coming up here momentarily after the news. There are several indoor farm shows this winter where you can visit with the folks from Case IH. But it's Louisville I'm thinking about. Yes, the Case IH team will be there at the National Farm Machinery Show. And I look forward to greeting you there in the South Wing, booth 6489. I'll be at Case IH on Wednesday and Thursday, February 14th and 15th at 2 in the afternoon. Come by and say hello. At the Louisville Farm Show, the Case IH display, South Wing, 6489. Thank you, Mr. Announcer. Yeah, we'll be there. And look forward to, if you're at the Louisville Show, come by there at Case IH. I think we'll have some caps to give away, something like that. The good Lord willing, the Crick Don't Rise. We'll be back with you next Saturday morning, Big O or myself or maybe even both of us, right here on Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on The Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.